Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm very delighted to be joined by Ben Hunter.
Hello.
As we sit across from the Australian Vogel Literary Award winner, Maria Perichik. Have I said it right?
You have.
Oh.
Perfect. Thank you.
Your book last night was announced as the winner, The Lost Pages, at an awards ceremony, which you knew about, but your mother didn't know you'd won the Vogel. And she was there that night, and you had friends there who didn't know. So you and your partner were the only ones in your family group that had any clue that you were a rising star in the literary world.
That's correct. And my friend who didn't know he was coming from Melbourne had a very dramatic time getting there. His plane was struck by lightning, and he missed the start of the ceremony, and then he had to sort of bargain and plead with the airline to let him onto the next flight. And when he arrived, all the doors were locked and he couldn't get in. He was kind of weeping and bashing at the door.
Dustin Hoffman-like.
Yes.
And the doors of Alan and Unwin.
The laws of Alan and Unwin. And luckily someone happened to come down and let him in. He pushed his way through the crowd just at the end of when I was thanking him, actually. So it was quite lovely. And he was very surprised.
How dramatic.
Very dramatic.
I love it.
Hmm.
So we haven't read it because it was announced last night. And this always happens to us. But can you tell us a little bit about it? I mean, on the front, it's got an enchanting novel of deception, mystery, and human frailty, which is a very catchy line there. And you've got some great quotes on the back, so you know that's as far as we've got. So tell us about a bit more about the book.
Well, it takes the form of a memoir written by Franz Kafka's friend and mentor, Max Brod, at the time when Max's fame is threatened to be eclipsed by Kafka's emerging greatness. And the story talks about the rivalry between the two men in literature and in love.
So when's Kafka writing and where is he writing? Is he famous at this stage or is he?
When the book is set, it's sort of set at the cusp of his fame. So he'd been writing a few stories. Kafka didn't write a lot, or he didn't publish a lot during his lifetime. Most of his work was published after his death by Max Brod and against the wishes of Kafka, who famously on his deathbed instructed Max to destroy...
To burn the papers?
Burn them, burn everything. And Max didn't.
Nice work, Max.
Thanks, Max. Yeah, exactly.
So how did this come about? How do you... are you a Kafka nut, or is it just that you found this story and went, it just starts to write itself in my head? Or how's it?
Yeah, I definitely was not a Kafka nut. I wouldn't say that I was a Kafka fan before, but I happened to read this article in the New York Times which told about the manuscripts from which Max had been publishing pretty much all of the Kafka work that we know. And he had taken these with him from Prague when he was fleeing from the Second World War, and he went to Palestine, this suitcase of papers, and it had been handed down and handed down, and this New York Times story was about this court case around these papers, and no one really knew what was in the papers because they were in the possession of these two septuagenarian cat ladies who considered it as their private property. They wanted to auction it off privately. They had a claim to the papers, and then the Israeli National Library also, and a German literary archive. All of these parties are fighting over these papers, but nobody knew what was in them.
So they could have just been some doodles.
Could have. Or it could have been some great masterpiece. Who knows?
Incredible.
So the court case has since been resolved, and everything will be eventually made available online. But when I heard about that story, I wondered what might be in there, you know? And the novel is my imagined text from that stash of papers.
So you've seen that... that article, and you've got the idea. What next? Do you spend the next 5 years reading everything you can about that period, and what sort of process? I mean, I like the idea that a creative person can just take off from where they are and they can just come up with it out of imagination.
Yeah.
What sort of stuff did you do to get this book together?
It was a long, long process. It took more than 5 years. When I read the article, I was interested in the story, and I did a bit more research about Kafka, and that's when I really started to get interested in the story, because when we think about Kafka, or when I thought about Kafka in the public sort of imagination, I always thought of a kind of a depressive, neurotic, tubercular guy. But actually I found he wasn't really like this at all. He was really funny and charismatic and very handsome, and he was very kind of obsessed with health and fitness, and he practiced this early 20th century exercise craze called the Miller technique, and he was just a fan of that. And he was also really successful in his job. He worked in accident insurance, and he developed all these safety devices for factories. And also, some people say the civilian safety helmet is thanks to Kafka. So it was totally not what I had thought.
Sounds like he should live in modern Sydney more so than Prague in the 20th
century. Yeah, and he is totally before his time, and his work, I think, is as well. So
I could live in Bondi.
He'd love it. He would be out there getting a suntan every day, I'm sure.
And what did you have from the partnership for Max? Did you have to research both those sides of things?
Yeah, I did. And when I researched Max too, I found a similar kind of reversal of what I had thought, because I'd known Max was almost like his agent. Like, he was really successful and popular and well-known in the arts community in Prague and then later in Israel as well. But then when I did more research about him, I found actually he was plagued by this terrible spinal deformity, and he had to wear this full body brace as a child, and it didn't stop him from developing a hunched back later in life. So it was kind of like almost this mirroring of these two men. And I found that really interesting, considering especially that pretty much most of the things we know about Kafka, we only know through Max. Mm. And so Max published Kafka's works, but he also edited them and in some cases finished some of them. And we don't know really like what is Max, what is Kafka in the work. It is a bit of a blurred line between the two men.
So my 19-year-old self is really annoyed that Max didn't finish the castle. Just stops. It's
yes.
Such a hard slog, and I got to the end and went, what?
Yeah.
It doesn't end.
Yeah.
It almost broke my heart.
From the few pages I have read of this book, that neurosis and anxiety associated, a lot of that seems to live in Max. And are you perhaps suggesting that those feelings that we get from Kafka's writing have been placed into his work by those edits?
I don't want to give too much away about,
of course.
But I mean, I think those feelings really are present in everyone,
yes.
Especially writers, probably. I know in me. Yeah, but the interplay between the two men is an interesting point. I'll say that much.
One of the speeches last night touched on what it's like to write in isolation. Talked about writers who, I'm a writer, I'm going to go do this thing, it takes forever to do, I'm going to be locked in my room for all these hours, and my family's going to put up with it. But I have no idea whether this is going to work or get published or anything like that. So until last night, when the world discovered that you've got a published book and you've won this award, how long have you been this sort of the writer who has been working away in the darkness, in a sense, putting sort of a writing life together, and you're getting sort of the skills to do what you've done here. Mm. Has it been ever since you were a kid, or is it something that came in adulthood?
Oh, well, I've always loved literature. I mean, it's my great passion. I'm reading all the time. I've always been reading all the time. I absolutely love fiction. And this is the first novel that I wrote, and it took me about 5 years to do. And I really think that all of that reading and thinking about fiction and talking about it is the thing that prepared me.
Okay, and you give me that clue. Let's talk about your reading, because people out there, because we meet a lot of writers, and a lot of writers who are on the other side, who haven't been published yet,
yeah.
And who are aspiring, and they're always looking for, how do these people do this? You know, what are the clues? What kind of reading were you doing? Were you reading the latest bestsellers to see what was going on, or were you just reading the greatest books ever written? What sort of things were you...
Everything. I mean, I have some books that I absolutely love, like some authors that I read and reread and reread so many times. One of my most favourite is Iris Murdoch, who I adore for how she can weave these really complex philosophical and psychological concepts into really engaging plots. You can read her books on so many levels, and I just love, and I love the dilemmas she puts her characters in. It's so exciting for me.
It's interesting to mention Iris Murdoch, because you know, you wouldn't find many people in the age bracket to win the Vogel who are reading Iris Murdoch. How did you come to read her?
Just by chance. I just stumble. I just read a lot just randomly by chance like that, and sort of latch onto the things that I love and discard the things that don't, that I don't connect with.
Was there anyone else in that sort of, I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, it's just interesting that, because it's very difficult to find these authors, you know, being in the front of shops, or you've got to go searching, don't you, to hunt these kind of people down?
You do, and I do read a lot of reviews and book reviews, and, you know, I get the London Review of Books every month and all of that, so I'm kind of always reading about, trying to find out about the things that aren't those things that you immediately see when you go into the bookshop and all of, although I do love those as well.
One of the things that we love here, having getting to meet authors, is when authors are just casually chatting about their reading habits, we're going, writing down names and going, oh, really? I never heard of them. Great.
Well, exactly, and that's what I do as well. You know, just listening to recommendations from everyone else, and yeah, it's fantastic.
So the choice to sort of take up this story meant you had to have a close look at Kafka's writing.
Mm.
Are you a fan of Kafka's writing?
At the time, I wasn't really. And I made the decision early on that I wasn't actually going to read a whole lot of Kafka as I was writing, because I really wanted to create my own Kafka, and I didn't want to... It was a bit of a challenge for me to write about such a huge literary giant.
Mm. And that's another question I have in the back of my mind.
Yeah, and so I really didn't want I didn't want Kafka in his works to sort of interfere with my Kafka, so I decided not to read anything by either of the two writers. But since finishing, I have reread, I read his work afterwards, and I have a much greater appreciation for it now.
Mm. And so, you know, I mean, Ben and I both like to write, and if we were looking at writing a short story or a novel, the safety of creating the characters all our own, so no one else can say, you got that wrong, you got that right, it's all mine, you can't tell me I got something wrong when I created the character myself. You've got Kafka nutcases out there who are going to pick up this book and go, what's she got right? And you'll get the sort of the emails back and forth. When you were writing, did you just go, I'm putting all that away, I'm just going to write my Kafka, I own this Kafka, and I'm just going to do, you know, I'm going to do this, do it in the way that I need it for my story, and I'll deal with the flack later on? Or,
to be honest, I never even thought about the flack.
I'm sorry about that.
Just occurred to me. But I mean, I never thought that this book would get published, really. I mean, it wasn't sort of in my mind when I was writing it, so I didn't really...
Not anywhere?
Well, I hoped it,
okay.
But yeah. And I was aware of that, and it was something hard to think about. And yes, you're right, people will maybe be disappointed and feel...
No, I don't think... when you have an obsession with an author, you tend
course.
To read everything. Like,
you
even
do.
You read the novels, like the people who read all the spin-offs from Pride and Prejudice, say.
Yes.
They like to moan about it, but they read every single one. Like, there's no stopping them from reading it, getting a sense, and then sort of, you know... it's sort of a love-hate thing, isn't it?
Mm.
With those kind of books.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember trying to read, I did fail to read it, was Heathcliff. It was a romance novel around Heathcliff, and I just thought, what did Heathcliff do in those years when he wandered off? This book was meant to show you what he did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I thought, Bronte would not be happy with you.
No.
But, yeah, it's a big thing to do. I mean, I've often thought about, you know, writing a novel about the early years of Napoleon, then I start to think about actually putting pen to page, and I just get terrified. It seems a very brave thing to do.
I feel like it was just sort of more thoughtless than brave. I mean, sadly.
It's the same thing, thoughtlessness, bravery.
Oh, yeah, often is, isn't
it?
Yeah.
When did you ever consider that this manuscript that you'd penned away at could sit on, even on the list for the Vogel, let alone be picked up and published? Is this... Are you just sort of patting yourself on the back now, like, yes, I've done it, or is it a surprise?
It was a surprise, and when I, because I've been working on the manuscript for years and years and years, and I had always planned to put it into the Vogel, and then I was, you know, I'm 35 now, so I just kind of got in, and I was thinking the previous year, should I put it in, And then I waited and did another edit and put it in this 2017 round. But by the time I had put it in, I did feel quite sort of fatigued with it, and I didn't really believe in it anymore. So I sort of really just put it in and sort of thought, oh.
It's your last year, it's your last chance.
Yeah, and so then it was a huge and wonderful surprise.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
And is it, it's dedicated to your partner. Partners are very important for writers. I mean, one of the comment last night about writers writing in the dark and not knowing where they're going to get published and all this stuff. Talking to writers who come through here, most of them never lose that. Like, you never know whether your next book's going to do well or you're going to do... So you sort of have this sort of sense of concern as your writing is this actually going to shoot the market? Will they pick it up? That kind of thing. So partners are extremely important. Were you one of those authors that were sharing as you wrote, or did you write first draft and say you can have a look at that? Or was it more collaborative where you're sort of going, is this working at all? And you've only written two pages or something? What kind of relationship did you have in the process?
Yeah, my partner's a filmmaker, so he knows, he's also a storyteller. We talked a lot about the concepts and the ideas together, but I didn't show him anything. He actually went away for 3 months, and which is when I wrote my draft very intensively. So yeah. He didn't see any of that until it was finished. And I just really wanted to do it on my own. I find it a bit distracting to have too much feedback all the time.
So. But it's that encouragement thing that a lot of people say, they sort of don't, like you were saying, just when you handed it in, you're like, oh, I don't even like this project anymore. Mm. It might win, it might not, I don't know, I don't care. Like, keeping that level of enthusiasm about what you're trying to do, because it's like self-employment. You sort of have to get yourself out of bed and get that thing done. And most people are working other jobs, and so you've got, you get home from work, you're like, I'm so tired, I've got to write another chapter, do I have to? You know, how do you keep going?
It was the most fun. I had the most fun writing that book.
That's a good way of going.
I loved it, and I also did it around my job, and I would get up extremely early and, I had a daily quota, some of my daily quota, and then I would go to work, and then I would come home and do my daily quota. But it was just so much fun, and I had a very boring social life for that time, and no one ever saw me. But I enjoyed it immensely. It was just great. I just loved the way thinking, sort of, I lived in that world in my head, and it was just, I really loved it.
Do you feel that you isolated yourself by having crazy thoughts in your head about some other foreign world that you're dealing with, and you can't actually bring it up at the, like, if you did meet someone for coffee and go, and how about that Kafka, huh?
Yeah, but I've got all those ideas happening all the time, you know, about whatever, anyway.
So you're hiding stuff from us now?
Just all the time. But I didn't tell anybody, really, that I was writing it when I did, so I sort of didn't feel any pressure to talk about it, which was I quite liked.
I recommend that for writers, is to try and keep it to yourself until you're ready.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of writing quotes, and they say just it sort of takes the wind out of your sails, having even discussing a scene with somebody. It sort of doesn't let you go on. I love the opportunity to talk to writers, and we do love to sort of find out how it all comes together. But we do have a short period, and I think we're running out of time. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you so much.
And
for
congratulations
me.
On winning. I'm going to be diving into this tonight, so I feel if they give us a couple more days, we could have had a bit of a read and had a bit of a more chat about this.
Just the first few pages have been excellent.
Very exciting, and thank you very much for taking trouble to come to Booktopia.
Thank you so much for having me.
The 2017 Australian Vogel winner, Lost Pages, is available at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.